Welcome, 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 everybody. This is Breath of Terror Radio.
Love Radio.
I am your host, Teresa Stixberry. Whoa. Let me figure out where that music's coming from. Oh, gosh.
What?
All the music was playing. So anyway, today is June 8th, 2012. I accidentally wrote on my notes that it was 10-12, so that's just not cool. So so today is June 8th, 2012. This is a special edition show. I don't usually do shows at this time. It's 101 degrees here at Lake Havasu. Yay. I'm glad I'm in the house. I trust everybody is their prayers and their highest intentions are come forth today. Tonight, my guest is Anique Natoyan. Welcome, Anique. Thanks for coming to the show tonight, hon.
Okay, you're welcome, Teresa. It's my pleasure. How are you today?
I'm excellent. I love the little mistakes I make.
Okay. Sounds good.
So we're going to be discussing your book, part one of your autobiography, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So it says here on the little thing that I got that you were born in Benin, West Africa?
Yes, that's correct. I was born in Benin, West Africa. It's a little country next to Senegal, La Côte d'Ivoire, and I was born over there, but I left Benin when I was 5 years old.
Uh-huh. Awesome.
Yes.
And then you moved to Paris, is that right?
Yes, I moved to Paris. My family moved to Paris because my father was promoted for a job, and his job was in a suburb of Paris, and the city is called Cergy, and so the whole family had to move to Paris because of his job.
Yeah.
Yes.
It says you were raised in a suburb for 29 years. You lived there, and that you're currently in Chicago. That's
yes.
Yes,
you're absolutely. In Chicago. Yes, yes.
I could verify that by your phone number.
Okay.
Okay. So, what was it like growing up in Paris, Anique?
Growing up in Paris was, at the beginning, it was kind of scary a little bit because I didn't know anybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, my family didn't know anybody, and we had to make some friends. And I had to go to a kindergarten, to a new school. And it was a little scary, when I was younger. But when I grew up, it was kind of, it was because, I was able to make some friends. I liked very much living in Paris because that's the city of love, like people say, and many places to visit. But my whole family was able to adapt, sort of culture. It difficult for me to speak French because I was raised in my family and everybody was speaking French, and so in Benin also the main language is French, and so it wasn't difficult for me to speak French because this is where this is the language I grew up with.
Mm, beautiful. Mm-hmm. So your father was an architect, and your mom took care of you and your five brothers, correct? You were the only girl child?
Yes, that's correct. I was the only girl, and I had six brothers. I lost two of my oldest brothers, and yes, I was the only girl.
Wow.
And my mom wasn't working. My father was he was the one who was bringing the money in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom was doing a good job taking care of the children. Yeah.
Mhm. Okay, which you were closer to some of your brothers than the others, and that brother had passed away, correct?
No, to tell you the truth, I wasn't close to my brothers.
Because, oh, okay.
Yes, unfortunately, we didn't grow up in a loving environment.
Uh-huh.
Because my family was. It was a lot of crying, yelling to each other, and also some violence. And I didn't grow up in a loving environment. And my parents didn't show us, how to take care of each other, how to love each other, because she wasn't able to, because she just couldn't.
Yeah.
She didn't know how to show that, and my father as well.
Uh-huh. Do you believe that is because of the way they were raised? Because my notes here on your publicity thing says that they were both raised in Africa, correct?
Yes, absolutely. They were raised in Africa, both of them. They got married in Africa as well. And I believe that they didn't grow up in a loving environment also as well.
Mhm.
Because they couldn't show that to their children.
Right.
Mhm.
Were you ever aware at any time as a child that you were not receiving the proper attention that a normal child would?
Oh, yes. At that time when I was a little girl, I didn't know that, I could have better attention. I could have much love, from my brothers or my parents, because it was only that I knew, disturbing family, yelling to each other, the violence. And I didn't know better. So I grew up like that, and
mm-hmm.
So when I think about it, and even when I was a teenager or a young adult, I was thinking a lot about my past as a little girl, and
mm-hmm.
And I was telling myself no, I could it wasn't normal, the way I was living wasn't normal. And it wasn't normal because it was the way it was at that time. But I did realize later on that, I didn't grow up in a loving family.
Right. Let's talk about, if you don't mind, about the insecurities and the drug and alcohol and sexual abuse from your father. We'll start with the sexual abuse from your father. When did you start realizing that this was not the way a parent is supposed to treat a child?
Well, actually, I do have some flashes, when I'm talking about it until now. I do have some images, that come to my mind, and I there is this image that I was a little girl, and I think I was 7, 8, or 9, and
uh-huh.
I was coming out from my father's bedroom, and I had the candy in my hand. That's all I remember.
Uh-huh.
And was drunk, and he was coming from work, and he went to my bedroom and he took me from my bed, and my mom was trying to stop him, but he didn't stop. She couldn't stop him, and after
right.
that I don't remember anything. It's like It's like I don't remember anything. But I do know that something happened, you know, when I was a child with my father. But I just don't remember. I got some sign because, you know, I'm very spiritual,
mm-hmm.
and it was maybe in 2005 or 2006. I did have some dreams where my father was taking my hand. Well, you know, he was abusing me,
mm-hmm.
you know, and also had this dream where, you know, the world a predator was, you know, in my dream. And when I had this dream, I woke up. And I knew that something happened. I even called because the dream that I had was kind of scary. I couldn't believe that, you know, it could happen. And I even called my brother in Paris, and I told him what dream I had. And mm-hmm. he remember anything, and I believed me. I think he believed me, but the thing is, he didn't remember anything, and it was like I got a gut feeling, you know, I got a strong feeling that something happened, but, you know, unfortunately, I don't remember the details. So,
probably all for the best.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, you got involved in some other kind of undesirable things like the alcohol abuse and things like that when you got older, correct?
Yes, absolutely. I started drinking when my mom passed away.
Mm-hmm.
I believe I was 17 or 18. And I started drinking little by little. And most of the time I was drinking by myself because I wasn't feeling good. I had low self-esteem. I didn't trust myself. I thought that nobody was loving me, and
mm-hmm.
I was just scared
yeah.
of the unknown, scared of just being in my being myself, and drinking for me was a kind of a reconfort because it did give me some. When I was drinking, I was feeling good.
Yeah.
I was feeling good. I was feeling like I'm alive. I was talking I couldn't talk, you know, when I wasn't drinking. So
yeah, you're very shy, huh?
Yes, I was very, very, very shy. And drinking for me was something that was giving me something more. And unfortunately, I was drinking more than the normal.
Right.
More
right.
than the normal. Mm-hmm. And also, yes, I was drinking also when I was with my friends, and I was drinking, you know, just to forget some stuff, you know, that I went
exactly.
through.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes, it was mostly about my childhood.
Yeah. Did anybody come into your life and up until this time at any point to talk with you or try to talk with you or tell you, look, I know things are not right and I want to help you?
No, nobody
no?
came because I was hiding my drinking
uh-huh.
from everybody because I was ashamed of it. And
yeah.
being a woman drinking that heavy, I couldn't tell anybody because I was ashamed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you hit it a lot, huh?
Yes, I was drinking a lot, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay, so we've kind of established a little bit of a dysfunctional background without, you know, open in Pandora's box, so to speak. And in being shy and misunderstood and abused and that very, very low self-esteem kind of thing that develops, that real low energy that develops like that.
Oh, yeah.
Were there times where the alcohol was able to help you pretend to be somebody else?
I'm sorry?
Excuse me. Were there times during your drinking where the alcohol helped you to be somebody else, so to speak?
Yes, absolutely. Oh, yes. When I was drinking, I was feeling like another person.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember that, you know, when I was going to a club to dance, you know, I was drinking, you know, before I go dancing.
Uh-huh.
And but I wasn't drinking at work. I was being careful that, you know, I was home,
mm-hmm.
and drink.
Okay, so when did you decide that there was something that you weren't liking about you in your life and that you needed to do something about it? What brought that about? Oh, I guess I've lost you. You're going to have to call me back in. Oh, boy. Okay, we'll have to wait till she calls back in, everybody. I seem to have lost her. Let's see. I guess I could put on a song and try to call her back also. Let me see. What shall we play? We could play this one. Hello, we lost you.
Yes, my phone just stopped working. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Okay, let's see. Where were we? I was asking you. We were talking about the low self-esteem and the hiding the drinking and being extra careful. You know, kind of acting out of the ordinary for who you were, you know. And
yes.
can you tell us how these things happened for you and what you thought you should do about these things?
Oh, about the problem?
Yeah.
Yes, actually, I didn't do anything because I needed the drink. I needed to drink because of past, because of my attempt to suicide, my the sexual abuse with my father, the violence in the family. I just couldn't imagine myself stopping drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I had to stop drinking because when I got divorced, married in 2003. No, it wasn't 2003. It was in 1999. My husband at that time, you know, he knew that I had an issue with alcohol,
mm-hmm.
and he just told me, you have to choose between your drinking or your family.
Oh, wow.
You know, it was kind of ultimatum. And of course, I chose to stop drinking. I stopped. I called the Alcoholic Anonymous,
mm-hmm.
and I stopped going to AA meeting. And a cop came to my house, and they asked me the question why, you know, I started drinking, and they explained to me that once you try to stop drinking, you know, you don't have to go back, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I was taking that seriously, and because also in a place where I was scared of losing my husband and my children, so I was taking this very, very seriously. And so I was going to a meeting for about 2 years, and I was changing. My thoughts were changing because I wasn't drinking anymore. I was getting mm-hmm. some confidence about myself. My low self-esteem wasn't there too much anymore. And my ex-husband didn't like it because I was able to talk back to him. Because when I, yes, because when I was married, you know, I would say amen to everything that he would tell me. And I didn't have the courage to talk for myself, to tell mm-hmm. him, no, I don't like this, I don't want to do this, or just giving my opinion. And then...
Right.
So he starts saying that I was changing, and I listened to him because he made me stop going to AA meeting. I stopped going to AA meeting. I listened to him, and then I started drinking again for about a few months, and I stopped going to AA meeting. Because I decided to get divorced, you know, from my mm-hmm. My ex-husband, when I got divorced, I was 6 months sober. But the funny thing is, when I was going to a meeting, I couldn't identify myself with other people who were at the meeting, because I was listening to them. I was saying, I did do the thing they are telling me. I wasn't drinking heavily, mm-hmm. you know. I was shy. I didn't have a self-esteem for myself. And the more I was going to a meeting, the more I was identifying myself with them. And when you go to a meeting, I was surprised to see, well people with the high standard of living, because mm-hmm. it can touch everybody in the planet. It can touch everybody, you know. And so I stopped having the thought that, you know, I'm kind of better than them, I'm not like them, and I'm not an alcoholic. I had to admit that I was alcoholic, you know, mm-hmm, before mm-hmm. the start with me. And in the AA meeting, they say you have to admit that, you know, you are alcoholic and that your life is unimaginable. I'm sorry, I'm still having a hard time to pronounce this word. And
you're doing great.
You just have to accept that you are alcoholic and you want to get better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In anything in life, we have to accept, you know, when we know that it's a problem for us. The faster
yes.
we accept it, and the more thoroughly we accept it and stop rationalizing it and trying to feel our way through it, you know, the quicker spiritual help we get, the quicker that we get to a point where this ain't so bad. You know, I am not what happened to me. You know,
yes.
these are things that happened to me. So, yeah. So tell me, how did your, were you only married once, or were you married more than once?
Married one time.
What?
I was married. Yes, I was married for 10 years.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
So how did you get to Chicago?
Oh, how I moved to Chicago, that's because my husband at that time, he got promoted from his job.
Uh-huh.
He was working in Paris, and he got a promotion, and this promotion was to work in Chicago, and we
uh-huh.
accepted. Because it was my dream to know the United States. I wanted to go because I was fascinated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you
but
and
really,
your and, your two boys, were your sons born at that time that your husband
yes.
got? They were. Okay. Did you
yes,
did
yes.
at any point in your relationship when you were going to AA and trying to stay sober and stuff, did you notice that your ex-husband was a lot like your father or anything?
Oh, yes, absolutely. He was like my father. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
He wasn't abusing me physically like my father did also.
Uh-huh.
But he was abusing me emotionally.
Uh-huh. It's so funny how, you know, it's so peculiar how, not funny like ha ha ha, but it's so weird how people, men and women, how we seem to incarnate over and over and over into the same lifestyle till we awaken to a point in our understanding the God of this universe that, you know, the only one that can help us do anything about it, huh?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So... Well, I am so happy you broke the cycle there, dear. I'm playing a small role in your life right now by having you on this show,
you are playing a big role. You are playing, you are just helping me to express myself. You know.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So what do you believe are the key things that helped you come to terms with what happened in your life as a young child and as a young woman with your own sons and your own realization that, wow, this is happening all over again, only in a different way?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What are some of the things that you did for yourself?
What I did for myself is I was and I'm still very introverted.
Mm-hmm.
I like to analyze myself, and when I do know that there is something wrong, you know, I'm trying to find a solution.
Mm-hmm.
And also, yes, I have been always like that, looking at myself, you know, from the inside, and also because I had some strength, also I had some courage, and also because I had some determination to stop drinking, you know, I had some determination to know exactly what I want and what I don't want anymore in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I promised myself to not get into the same relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not, because I'm living with a man who is very nice to me, and we do understand each other, you know.
Uh-huh.
And because I didn't want to go back where I was coming from.
Yeah. It sounds like you had it kind of on and off, you know, up and down, high and low, type of recovery. What are some of the things that opportunities that you missed in your life because at that time you were drinking?
I missed some work.
What was that?
Work, my job.
Job, yeah.
Yes, I missed some opportunities because I used to work for the ministry. I had the opportunity to... but they didn't renew my contract because of my low self-esteem, and also because I was drinking a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I missed some opportunities, mostly about work, work position. And I believe that if I wasn't drinking, or if I, you know, my life was better, or I wasn't by myself, you know, all that time, I could have get a higher position in my work environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. And also in my marriage, it was one of the trouble that I had. You know, it was my drinking.
Uh huh.
Yes.
Did you? I know. A lot of people they try to defeat the bottle sometimes without God. Did you try that approach?
What do you mean?
Oh, I've known people in my past that they say, well, I don't need God. I don't need any of that. I can just quit. Did you try?
No. I needed God.
Yeah.
I needed God. Yes. Because, you know, when I was going to AA meeting, you know, I changed. You know, listening to people talking about their drinking problem wasn't mm-hmm. It wasn't for me anymore. It was like I needed something more. I needed to understand who I really was. You know,
uh-huh.
And so I quit going to AA meeting. I stopped drinking. I think it's 15 or 16 years ago. I'm sober now, and also because you know I was spiritual. I started to understand that I was spiritual. You know, I first was an indigo children.
Mm-hmm.
An indigo children, and I discovered that because I did some research, I talked to people, and so I did some research, and little by little, I understood who I was, and my spirituality, you know, was going on, you know, was developing a lot,
mm-hmm.
and this is where I am.
So when you started the self-awakening process, like, were you having dreams or visions or just intuitive knowing when
yes,
you would
absolutely.
Yeah, so you yes. would know the truth when you read it, because you were choosing at that time to be honest with yourself, right?
Yes, absolutely. You know,
yeah.
When I started discovering that I was an indigo children, you know, 2005 or 2006 or earlier, and
mm-hmm.
I had premonition dreams, and
uh-huh.
those dreams were happening all the time, but I couldn't anybody because I was scared that people will laugh at me, so I was keeping that. Yes, I was keeping that for myself. I also have a healing ability, and I have a healing ability, and I could heal people. But the thing is, since last year, I'm going through a spiritual ascension.
Yeah,
and I'm being connected to. I have been connected to my inner child.
Yes, that's awesome.
You can call it inner child. You can call it your ego.
Mm-hmm.
So since then, I'm connected to my inner child, and it's kind of a challenge. It's very difficult because I hear my inner child all the time.
Uh-huh.
All the time, and, you know, and most of the time I don't listen because it's to get me in trouble in my life, you know. And, yes, exactly, and I don't want to do that. So
yeah.
I'm trying to, I'm not listening, and this is where I am. I'm hearing my inner child, and my inner child has been through very, very difficult situations.
Uh-huh.
About the abuse, about the suicide, and It's a challenge because we don't agree on things. So this is where I am right now.
Yeah, it's very important to not listen to the ego. You know, we're past the point of surviving here, people. We're actually living our dreams, and you are living your dream today with beautiful, supportive people, and your book is helping people, and I posted the links up for your book so people can check it out in the chat room there. And
Okay, great.
Yeah. So, and I wish you all the best on your dream, on living your dream, living your heart's desire, because it's important to do that. It's important to reach out and help people. I mean, there's just not enough healers in the world. There's just not enough people that have picked themselves up and put themselves and looked at who they truly are in their hearts, you know, and said, yeah, that's me. That's, I can't wait to tell the world, you know, I just can't wait. So,
mm-hmm.
so
thank you.
Yeah. So you have two sons, right?
Yes, I have two boys. One is 17, and the other one is going to have 16 on Sunday.
All right. That's excellent.
Yes.
How were your kids when they were littler?
How they were?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my children, they were asking some love.
Uh-huh.
And you know, to tell you the truth, I couldn't give to them the love that they needed.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have it.
So how was that changed for you? And when did it change? What choices did you make so that, you know, you didn't just sit around and feel bad because you were kind of an incomplete mom? What did you do for yourself?
For myself, I was telling myself that I need to be a better mom. I don't have to do the same thing as my mom or my father did.
Uh-huh.
You know? I had to be there for my children, and I'm divorced. I see my children, sometimes on the weekend, because I didn't have custody of my children because of my drinking.
Oh.
And yes, they don't live with me. They live with their father.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, when parents see their children every other weekend, you know, it's very difficult, and I wanted to be there for them because of the little time that I had with them. I realized that I had to give them, some quality time.
Uh-huh.
instead of quantity time. And the quality time, you know, the quality time that I wanted to give them was, you know, to listen to them and to be a better mom and trying to have fun with them. And I wanted to do the opposite that my mom did for, you know, to me. She did her best, but but the thing is, I didn't want to copy the same thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
So when you were drinking, you felt very powerless to do that, didn't you?
Oh yes, absolutely. Oh yes.
Yeah.
I wasn't there for my children when I was drinking.
Yeah.
I wasn't there. I was too preoccupied by by myself, my misery, only thinking about how miserable I was, you know, how low self-esteem I had.
Mm-hmm.
And now I don't think the same way anymore.
Well, that's true. I know that for a fact. All right. So,
yes.
What do you think the greatest thing is that you did besides quit drinking that you did for yourself? Like, maybe you went to court and you stuck up for yourself and.
Yes. It was the best things I did for myself, because I couldn't stay married. I had to get out from my marriage. I was too miserable, and the best thing that I did was to divorce, and also having my children.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of funny, because if I wasn't married, I wouldn't have my children, but you know, they are my life. They give me strength.
Yeah. I know kids have a funny way of helping us sober up, huh?
Oh yes, absolutely.
So
they know, you know, where I have been through. They know that, you know, I wasn't happy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they do understand why I divorced their father.
Mm-hmm. You did something that your parents didn't do for you. You took time with your children and you explained things to them, especially when they had questions, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. They do understand. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. So tell us what happened with, we're going to go back to your father now. Tell us what happened when you heard that your father had passed away.
Oh, when my father passed away, I didn't feel anything.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't feel anything. I wasn't sad. I wasn't happy. It was kind of, everybody was okay with that. It was kind of deliverance.
Mm-hmm.
Because my father was making the house very sad, very scary place to live.
Uh-huh.
And my mom, my brothers and myself, we were
Are you still there, Anik? Hello? I think I've lost you, hun. Are you still there? Let me refresh this. Yes, we've lost her again. Yeah, we'll have to have her call back in. I think she's having a little trouble with her phone.
Yes, my phone is...
there you are.
Yes.
Okay, so we were talking about your father when he passed away, and that you didn't have any feelings at all, because he had been making it extremely difficult at home at that point. And, you know, with a lot of tension and violence and things going on. So how did the family handle that?
How did I handle it?
Yeah, how did your family handle the whole thing, all of you together?
Oh, we were scared of him.
Uh-huh.
We were scared of him because he had an issue with the drinking, the alcohol. He was drinking also, and he was beating everybody in the house, mostly my brothers.
Yeah.
And he was beating me also with a belt, you know, my brothers as well. And he wasn't treating my mother correctly. He was beating up her also.
Oh, wow. So that was a very scary place to grow up. Very violent, very, you know, I always call that kind of like beyond dysfunctional.
Yes. Oh, so, yes, it was very dysfunctional, very.
Yeah. So at what point in your life did you, I know I'm kind of jumping around here, I'm just trying to feel the energy. At what point in your life did you believe that God was actually listening to you, hon?
Oh, well, I always
felt. How old
felt
were you?
That, I was a little girl. I felt God with me.
Uh-huh.
You know, and when my mom passed away, one of my aunt asked me to start working because I couldn't go to work and I couldn't go to school anymore. I had to work, and she asked me to start working. So I started doing a test for the Ministry of Equipment, and I succeeded the test. I passed it. And I was very, very surprised because I didn't prepare it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't study very well, you know, the test. And 1 week later, I received a letter saying that I passed it.
Oh, awesome, awesome.
Yes, and at that time I knew that it was a gift from God. Because, you know, I always thought that it took my mom. You know?
Yeah.
But on the other hand, he gave me a work to be able to, to make my life.
Right, right, right.
Mhm.
And so how did everybody in the family handle your mother's death?
Oh, everybody was sad. Everybody
yeah,
was sad.
A lot of difference
yes,
in your
yes.
father's, huh?
Oh yes, absolutely. Yeah, because we knew that you know our mom, she was there for, she was taking care of us, you know, cooking, cleaning, doing, you know, what she was supposed to do as a mother, and we knew that she was a good person.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't happy with herself, but
yeah.
She was a very, very good person. And everybody was crying when she passed away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What happened to her?
Oh, she started to have a breast cancer.
Oh,
and
dear.
Because because she didn't take care of herself, it became a tumor in the brain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, as far back as you can remember, the abuse was going on, and that kind of stacked the deck against you a little bit in life, but yet you still found the strength and the courage to seek God, so to speak, right?
Oh, yes. I remember I was praying God all the time.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Were you allowed to go to church when you were a young girl or anything? Or did your parents not do that?
Oh, yes. My mom was Catholic.
Uh-huh.
And she raised me as a Catholic person. And she was forcing me to go to church. I didn't want to go, but when she passed away, and it was at that time that I really, really needed God, and God gave me the strength to go through what I have been through, and also to take care of myself.
Yeah.
Mhm.
Just saying hi to the people in the chat here.
Oh, okay.
My online friend Senor is in there. He's just a wonderful soul, just wonderful. He loves God with all his heart.
Oh, okay.
So you realized at one point you realized as a parent, not only were these horrendous things repeating themselves, you know, through your marriage and yourself as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you realized that you really had to do something to be the one, be the vessel, be the instrument used by God to break the cycle of abuse in your family, right?
You.
Pardon?
Me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear the question, Teresa.
Okay, I said that through the abuse and everything, and through realizing all about you and all about you, all of the things that needed to change, you know, not only for you but for your sons, you
mm-hmm.
realized that God would have to play a crucial role, right?
Oh yes, absolutely. Until now, now, because I know God is with me, and you know, and He will be always with. You know, with someone, you know, he asked for his help. And please, because he gave me the spiritual gift that I have.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I also know, I always thought that I had a purpose in my life. This purpose was to just, you know, talk to people or using my gift, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that I really want to use is my healing gift.
Mm-hmm.
But because I'm going through ascension, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's kind of difficult because I need to heal. And my ego, my inner child also needs, you know, to heal. So,
yes. I believe that's true for everybody on the planet at this moment.
Yes, absolutely.
So you went from being a very shy, problem drinker, misunderstood and underappreciated individual into a very beautiful spiritual woman.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, and you have your book, Anique, A True Story, Autobiography, Part 1,
mm-hmm.
Currently available, and I've posted that in the chat as well for people. And you can find Anique's book at AnnikeNTruestory.com. That's the link for her book. And when are you going to put part two out?
Well, actually, the part two is going to be about my ascension.
Uh-huh,
know,
awesome.
My awakening. And
uh-huh.
I don't know yet when I will start. For that, I have to do it. And I will
exactly.
talk about... I will talk about what I'm going through, about my inner child, my ego, yes, I have to do it.
Just take lots of notes every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To add also that I have, I think, my first book in 2010, and my first book, which is IndigoHeart.com, that's the website.
IndigoHeart.
Some poetry, some poems that I wrote. It was a time where I was indigo. So
uh-huh.
I wrote about some poems about being an indigo and how I was seeing, you know, the world and how I was seeing the people getting along together, and
mm-hmm. Anique, what are some things that you totally surrendered in your life, even if it was like a second at a time, or a minute at a time, or an hour at a time, so that you could keep God first in your life?
Well, I surrender myself with what's coming in my life. I
mm-hmm.
don't try to fight it.
Mm-hmm. And you
don't try to
rationalize it.
Yes.
Figure it all out.
Yes. No,
yeah.
I don't.
Are you still there? Oh, boy, I'm having a hard time with this today. Let's see. I think we're going to go to a song. It's called It's Only Love That Matters. We'll be right back in 4 minutes and 2 seconds. Stay tuned. Okay, Nick, we're just... Okay, everybody, we're back. Anik, are you still with me?
Yes, I'm still here. My phone is still not working correctly.
Oh, all right. Well, that's all right. Sometimes it doesn't show up on the recording, so hopefully that will be a good thing.
Okay, I hope so.
So, let me see. What would you say to somebody that's in a situation like you've been in with the drinking right now?
Well, what I would say is you have to be ready if you want to stop drinking. You know, you have to think seriously if you really want to stop drinking, because decide that you need to stop drinking, it would not work.
Right, exactly.
And you have to admit it also that you have an issue with the drinking.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole mirage of things that go into that subject right there. And I know one of them is denial. You know, I don't have a problem. You got a problem. You know, I can do what I want to do. You go do what you want to do. And things like that, very low energy things. And it's very, very sad that there is even such a thing as alcoholism. It's very sad.
Yes, absolutely.
I know I struggled for a really long time and tried all different kinds of things. I tried all kinds of things, and until I got serious about who I am, good and bad, you know, all my weaknesses and all my strengths, and you know, all of that I got real with my Creator, with my God, and He got very real with me, and it has never let me down. You know, it's never let me down to have a desire to stay out of that dysfunctional denial and lying to myself and things like that. So I really respect you and I honor you in a way that, you know, it's more than just something you and I can sit on this radio show and just discuss. You know what I mean? It's something that's very personal and very real, and we're very passionate about helping other people to not have this kind of things in our lives. And it's very sad. I have some people in my life that are so in denial about their drinking. You know, this is very, very sad.
I know.
I lived right by a bar, and I know this gentleman, and every day he's at the bar for 6 hours, first thing in the morning, then he leaves for 4 hours, then he comes back until closing. And it's so sad because he is a really neat individual. He's a pretty neat guy, you know, and it's just very, very sad that we get to a point in life where, you know, the God that we were introduced to as a child or as somebody's child or even as an adult, that it's just not good enough and it's just not going to work. And, you know, we're so busy looking at somebody to point a finger at instead of, you know, just saying, look, there's no right, there's no wrong, there's no good, there's no bad, there's just today, and today I choose not to drink. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
And we can't do that until we accept our role in it.
Yes, absolutely. We have to recognize that we have an issue with the alcohol or any kind of drug, you know, before getting better.
Right. Or even undesirable behaviors as well. Yes, yes, yes.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So, were you in a different country, Anique, when you got your divorce, or were you in America?
Oh, I was in America.
You were, okay.
Yes, I got divorced 2 years after I came to United States.
Uh-huh. So were you scared?
It.
What's that?
I had to do it. I had to divorce.
Yeah.
Oh yes, because I couldn't stay in the marriage. I was unhappy. I was crying all the time.
Were you aware during that event in your life? Were you aware that you were being called to something better?
Oh yes.
Yes. So that was part of your motivation too. It wasn't just entirely pain. It was that you knew that there was something else out there.
Oh yes, absolutely. I knew it was something else out there because of the way I was seeing my friends living, the way they were, you know, between partners, the way they were together. You know, talking together, and I knew that something was better than what I was living.
Right,
and also
right.
Because of my spirituality, I didn't want to. I knew that something was better than I was going through.
Awesome. I'm just saying hi to some people in the chat room for us.
Okay.
See, we have Aloha Jay, Gerber Daisy, some guests and senior and myself in there. All right. Okay.
All right.
So how have things progressed for you to get you to what I want to let people know about your dream of meeting this specific individual? What chain of events led up to that? Was it visions? Was it dreams? Was it just
It was visions.
Uh-huh.
Visions. It was because of my premonition dreams.
Uh-huh.
I knew that, you know, when I had my dreams, the next day or 2 days later, it was happening. And whenever I was... It was at work. It was with my friends. And I even had some premonition dreams about my closest friends. But I didn't tell them anything because I didn't want them to say that I'm crazy. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
And, yes. and also because of my healing ability. And some of my coworkers, they were asking to pain. The time it was some headache or some pain, you know, or you know, something like that. So I was putting my hands on the pain, and it disappeared. The pain disappeared.
Ah.
Yeah, and I was doing that to myself also. You know, when I had some headache, when I was hurt on my leg, on my arm, I was putting my hands on the pen, and it disappeared.
Awesome. That's excellent.
Yes. Yeah.
So you had a dream about that, and then you just started living that. That's beautiful.
Yes, I was, you know, I missed my dream.
Yeah.
I missed my dream. Yes. Because, you know, since that, you know, I've been connected to my ego, I feel that everything stopped.
Uh-huh.
You know, my premonition dreams stopped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You still have to do some dream work, hun.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
we can talk about that later.
Yes.
So you do have another motivation, a type of dream regarding your book, right? Miss Oprah Winfrey.
Yes.
Yes. Let's talk about that.
Yes. Yes. Well, you know, I don't know if I told you, but I had, it was last year, I had this dream that I was going to meet, I was meeting Obama, and Obama came to my house. It was a funny dream. He came to my house in limousine.
Oh,
and,
wow.
The limousine was black. And so he came to pick me up at my house. And when I got in the car, he told me, tonight we are going to meet Oprah.
Ah.
And I do remember that in my dream, Oprah, she had a red dress.
Uh-huh.
And I met Oprah face to face. And I can remember very well the dream. And I know that is going to happen. It's just I don't know, maybe it's a matter of time. I don't know, but that this is one of my dreams also, to meet Oprah.
Uh-huh. Do you know, sometimes when we have, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but sometimes when I have dreams, and I've always had dreams, and when I'm active in them, when I've actually completed all the steps up to the climax, if you will, the finale of the dream, before the dream is actually completed, I get in this space of, okay, guys, anytime now, anytime, I'm ready, you know,
okay.
And I've learned to be patient with that, and I've learned to ask for direction. And ask for signs of a completion nearing its end.
Okay.
So that's something that you could try. Just felt like I should tell you that. So
yes. I thank you for telling me, and maybe we can talk later after the interview.
Oh yeah, that's no problem.
Okay. Yes.
So,
but
yeah,
I hope that
I will
meet Oprah. Mm.
Yeah, I feel like it's going to be pretty soon.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So, okay, so we've talked about a lot of stuff here. We still have 50 minutes left. Let's see. So, Anik, how are you in your personal life now? How are you helping people outside of letting them know that you have this book? Are you in?
I don't have the opportunity to do what I would like to do because I work a job to have some money,
mm-hmm.
you know, to pay my bills.
Uh-huh.
And I don't do the job that I really want to do. You know,
uh-huh.
I mean by that, you know, helping people or talking to them. And it just started with my book, and I really wanted to thank you for letting me express myself about my life and what happened to in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what I really wanted to do is to do some talk show, but going to some different places, some shelter,
mm-hmm.
some organization where I can talk about my book and what I have been through, because what I have been through, it's all women who has been through that.
Yeah, there's
you know?
A lot of them. Unfortunately, there's a lot of them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And so this is what I would like to do.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Let's go back to your childhood after you moved to Paris, right?
Yes.
And
yes.
You were, how old were you?
When I was in West Africa or in Paris?
When you moved to Paris from Africa.
Oh, I was 5 years old.
Okay. I heard you on another talk show in you were discussing how it was a little difficult going to the schools.
Yes.
Yeah. And is this,
yes.
was it because you were indigo and you didn't know what the heck was going on? Or is it because?
Oh, I think that's because I was indigo and I didn't know that I was indigo.
Uh-huh.
But also because, I went to a kindergarten, you know, when I was 5 years old or 6 years old, and so my friends from school,
uh-huh.
they were teasing me because I was black.
Oh,
and I took it very wrong. I started crying. And I still can't remember this event.
Uh-huh.
But I couldn't understand why they were mean, you know.
Right, right.
Yes.
The younger kids, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I was born black and I'm proud of it. And, you know, actually, you know what? Actually, I wasn't proud to be black. I grew up proud to be a black woman. I wasn't proud before because of what I was seeing on TV, because of sometimes the way people were talking about black people.
Mm-hmm.
When I do remember now, you know, I wasn't proud. And it's because I didn't have a high self-esteem of myself.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm fine. I'm just fine with it. I'm a black woman and I'm proud of it.
Awesome.
Yes.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Were you surprised when were you sad when you lost a couple of your brothers?
Oh yes, my goodness, yeah.
Was one of them the brother that you felt a connection to, that you called when you were being abused when you were younger?
No, it wasn't him. It was my oldest brother. Mm-hmm. And I lost two of my oldest brother. Mm-hmm. I lost one when I was maybe 4 years old. And I lost another one in 1995.
Oh.
And yes, and he was drinking as well. And I lost him, but I was very sad. And I felt guilty because of his death. For some times, I felt guilty. I felt
right.
guilty because...
the guilt, yeah.
Yes, exactly, because I wasn't there for him. And I felt guilty. And now I'm okay because I did realize that it wasn't because of me.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
So sometimes you could talk to your one brother that lived in Paris after you moved there.
Mhm.
Yeah.
Oh yes, absolutely. I still have two oldest brother, and I have two after me.
Uh huh. Two younger and two older.
Yes, two younger and two older. Yes, and I talk to them sometimes. You know.
Uh huh.
Yes.
Have they been inspired to those of them that are drinking? Have they been inspired to take a really good look at theirself?
No, not like me.
No.
No. They don't want to recognize that. We never talk. About we never talk about what happened in our family.
Uh huh.
So there's talk still about the, anything.
So there's still that pain and that secrecy that.
Oh
that,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Very much. Mhm.
Wow. I know sometimes when we go through, things, when we're violated, when we're assaulted, when we're raped, when we're abused. Or molested,
mm-hmm.
it actually in a way unconsciously becomes who we are, and that's
mm-hmm.
how the secret and the pain lives on. And
yes.
You know, it's only when we let that laser light of love slice through our mind, our will, and our emotions, and clear it out for us, we just decide
mm-hmm.
to let it go. Just let it go. And I truly hope that happens for your brothers. I really, really do.
Yes, I hope too. But the thing is, you know, I even wanted to send my book to my oldest brother, but he said no. He said no because I was talking about about what happened with my father.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't want to read my book.
Right. Well, there's
yeah.
probably a few reasons for that.
Oh, yes, you know? Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I do understand. I respect that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me see. Were there any key people in your life? Was there someone from AA or maybe the church or something that helped you kind of take this big pile of life that you have and set it aside and let God love you for a little while, and then you just started picking one piece of trash up and surrendering it at a time?
Yes.
Was there someone there for you that helped you figure all that out?
Yes, I you know, my friends from AA meeting, they helped me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they helped me a lot. They supported me, you know, when I was divorcing.
Mm-hmm.
And but the thing is, I quit communicating with them. I don't know. Since I was talking about my spirituality. They
mm-hmm.
didn't want to believe me. They didn't want to believe me, and they stopped communicating because I was talking about my dreams. I was
yeah.
talking about my healing ability. I was talking about my spirituality, but they didn't want to believe me, and they quit talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what year was this?
I'm sorry?
What year was this? Was this recently or the last 4 or 5 years?
It was 4 years about.
About four years ago, 2008, yeah.
Yes.
There was a great energy move and a shifting and a positioning that happened in 2008. That's why that happened. Boy, girl, we got to talk. We got to talk.
I know.
So the key people are no longer in your life, and you're back on that path where it's just you in your spiritual life right now. It's just,
and
then plus you're just doing life and working and loving your boys and things like that, right?
Yes, that's what I'm doing for now.
Yeah.
That's what I'm doing. I'm going through my ascension, you know, my awakening. I don't know when I will be done with that, you know, but I'm trying to live my life, you know, going to work, you know, being there for my boyfriend and my children, you know.
Mm-hmm.
For now, this is what I'm doing, yes.
Awesome, awesome.
But I want to do more. I want to do more.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, everybody, we've been talking with Anique. She has her autobiography out. She was born in West Africa and raised in the suburbs of Paris for 29 years. She now lives in Chicago since 1998. We've discussed her parents. And her brothers and the losses and the tragedies that she's had and her path to the ego realm of drug and alcohol abuse and how that by choosing the correct path for her through her relationship with God, it inspired her to get sober and stay sober for these last 16, 17 years, right, Anique?
Yes.
That's just remarkable. Yeah.
And my spirituality helped me also to stay sober.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it will do that.
Yes.
Why do you think some people get this whole thing and some people don't, you know, they're like, I'm a spiritual person and I can still have a drink. You know, why do you think they do that?
Why are they still drinking, you say?
Yeah.
I think it's, I always knew that I had some inner strength.
Mm-hmm.
I always knew that. And I know that I know that if I pick up a drink, I would not stop.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't stop drinking, and I don't want that because I suffer too much to stay sober.
Yeah.
And now I don't want I don't want to go back to my drinking. I would never do that.
Yeah.
And I know some people that I see almost every day. You know, some friends, some, you know, family, and they drink, but I want to stay sober.
Yeah.
I don't want to drink anymore.
Go ahead, hon.
Because I know that if I pick up a drink, I will not stop again. I wouldn't stop drinking.
Yeah. Did you ever go through that when you were drinking? Did you ever go through this realization that, you know, you thought maybe you could handle it, and if you could just get people to get off your back and leave you alone, so so you could have your drink, everything would be okay?
No.
I know some people that are actually going through that right now, and I'm like, wow, you talk to God and you talk to your angels every day, but yet you're choosing to drink, knowing that you live in complete isolation, some people are extremely self-abusive. They don't need an abuser. They're doing it all themselves, by this outward motion of energy that they create, and it's all very unreal. It's all very unreal and contrary to who they truly are. And if you're in that kind of place, get out. Guilt and fear are not your friends. They're just not.
Yes, no, I needed some help. I couldn't do that by myself.
Yeah. Awesome. So what's your favorite part of your book?
My favorite part of my book is about when I talk about indigo.
Aha.
Yes. When I talk about indigo, my spiritual gift.
Uh-huh.
I still don't like when I read about the part about my father.
Mm-hmm.
And I still say to myself, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like this part. My book is, I'm proud. I'm very proud to, that my book is, out there. But when I read the chapter, I say, wow, I have been through all of this,
right?
And sometimes I think, wow, that's something. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of a surrealistic feeling, like, wow, I know better than to ask. Did that really happen to me?
Exactly.
But wow, I'm glad it's over. I'm glad that's over.
Yes.
I'm glad I have closure.
Yes.
And every time I read this, I can be healed to a greater, greater, greater extent. Like kind of like peeling an onion, we get down to the tears. And
yes.
Then we get down to the meat of the subject, and then we surrender and we allow the beauty and the majesty and the divinity that we truly are to come forth with no fear, no fear, and that's an honorable thing that you did, writing that book for yourself. And it's good that you do, read what you have out there for other people to read, and that you're actually practicing those spiritual concepts and things that you share in your book. Your story, actually still doing those very same things, and you're doing it from a fear-free perspective, you're fear-free, and that's a beautiful thing, and it shows in your eyes, and it does, and it shows in your laugh.
Oh, really?
that's really awesome. I really appreciate that you've taken this time to share with us. So we still have
minutes.
What do you want to talk about? Let's see. So that's your favorite part. And then you have some not so favorite parts, but you're able to look at them in a different light. And through the strength of who you are as a spiritual human being. And that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, yeah. So, so how's Chicago treating you?
Well, Chicago is nice. Actually, I used to live in Chicago, but now I'm living in Rockford.
Uh-huh. Rockford, Illinois?
Yes, Rockford, Illinois since October, November.
Uh-huh.
Yes, and it's fine. Yeah, it's very nice. I like it.
Too cold for me, I would freeze. I'd turn into a big giggling popsicle in the winter, and I wouldn't be able to get out of the house.
I know, huh? I know.
I like the desert.
The winter. The winter is very difficult.
Yeah, I like the desert and the heat. And
Yeah.
All right. So, what kind of fun things do you do for yourself now?
The fun things, you know, I used to paint, you know, because I'm an artist, and I paint, I do some painting, and I use pastel.
Oh, wow, cool.
Yes, I use pastel. It's on my profile on Facebook, you know, some of the painting. Actually, you know, it was... I got this gift also when I was married, I attempted suicide, you know, and I went to the hospital and at the hospital I took recovery, and one of the you know about recovering was to paint. And this is how and where I learned to paint. I started, you know, painting a flower. And almost 1 week of being at the, you know, at the station at the hospital, I couldn't stop myself. I had to paint almost every day because it was kind of therapy for me. So I was painting almost every day, and I got enough painting that I did some exposition in the art
awesome.
Fair.
Yes, that's cool.
I did two of them, and I sold a few of them, maybe one, two, or three. This is how I learned to paint.
Awesome. So you got to give a little beauty back to the community. That's awesome.
Yes, I'm trying. I'm trying, yes.
Yeah. So do your kids like to paint?
Oh, yes. Florian, because he was seeing me painting and drawing, he tried. He tried, but I guess he didn't have enough patience. He didn't have enough patience, and he stopped drawing.
But he
could have been good if he had continued to draw.
How did your children have when you sobered up? How did your children take it? Did they
wow, they were watching me, believe me. They were watching me. They were being careful if I didn't have a drink at home. Oh, yes, because mostly the oldest one, he knew that I stopped drinking, and he was watching me, you know. Yes, he was being careful to check, you know, on me.
Did it make you angry?
Oh, no, not at all.
You knew what they were doing, huh?
Yes, because I knew that it was for me. It wasn't. I didn't take it bad in a bad way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. So how long was it before they realized, you know, was it like a year or two before they realized, hey, mommy's really doing this?
Oh, how long? I think the next year they did realize. Yes. The next year they did realize that, you know, I was serious about staying sober. You know, and I believe they were proud of me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
That's awesome. And do they live with you now? They live with you now, right?
No. They still live with their father. Yeah. But
so
one day,
you were able to come to terms with all of that and still go forward, right? With help from God.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm still praying God. And I know that He's with me.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you've had quite a journey here. This has been quite a journey to go from being born and raised in West Africa all the way up to Chicago, and all the good and all the bad that you brought into it. And our friend in the chat, Gerber Daisy, she says she has great inner strength to have survived what she did. Bless her heart. Yes, Gerber, that's the truth. Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. Thank you. Thank you.
So if you guys want to call in and talk to Nick anytime, would be a good time. I should have said that earlier. I'll figure out how to be a radio show host when I get all grown up.
That's okay.
I know coming from dysfunctionalism and coming from lack and coming from abuse and alcoholism and then choosing the same lifestyle for yourself, somewhere down the line we have to decide, this isn't a social game anymore. This is a serious life-changing moment I'm faced with, Some people get in trouble with the police or their family or, they lose their jobs and things like that, or they realize, wait, I want these four things in life, I want health and stability and wellness and abundance, but they just can't seem to bring it to fruition because, they're living that great lie that comes in that bottle. And ladies and gentlemen, they call it spirits for a reason.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So, so I'm really, really glad to have you on the show tonight. And then, what would you say to someone right now that is just getting to know themselves spiritually? What would you say to them to help them keep putting one foot in front of the other and just not giving up?
Well, first I will say to, someone has to know what he wants in life, and praying. Don't give up on praying because, you will get the answer, some days. And also surrender.
Yeah.
Yeah, try to surrender, not, he needs to surrender and not try to change what's going on in his life.
Right. Oh, did I lose you again? I hope not.
No, I'm here.
Oh, God. Okay, good. All right. So we still have 20 minutes and 46 seconds left. So while a unique experience that you've had, what prompted you to share your story in a book?
Well, because I know that many women or even men went through the same difficulties I have been through. And this is what gave me the courage to talk about it. I'm still a little embarrassed or ashamed about what happened with my father, you know.
Right.
But talking about it does help me, you know, a lot to accept it or even to talk about it. And mostly, you know, sharing my book, because I know that, you know, many people have been through the same situation I have been through. And they will inspire, you know, some of their friends, their family. And this is a good feeling.
Right, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. Any time that a human soul can step up out of secrecy and degradation and shame and fear is a beautiful, beautiful thing. It is.
Yes.
It's a beautiful thing, you know. And the trick at that point is to stay as close to your spiritual source as possible and never let go. Never think that you've arrived and you've gotten it all figured out. You know, we have to love ourselves the way we are loved. Because
absolutely.
We are loved. Yeah. So.
Oh,
yeah. Okay, Anique. I'm going to be choosing a song here for us so we can go out. And I have one. It's kind of a long song. It's by Jonathan Elias. And I don't have the album information in front of me, but it's from an African choir. Does some of the background vocals in it. And I want to thank everybody for coming tonight. And Anique, I would love to have you back on the show when you get your next book out.
Oh, yes, I will. It will be my pleasure, Teresa.
All right. And then you take this recording and you email this recorded link to Oprah Winfrey. I want you to do that for yourself. And,
okay, I will do it.
Yeah. And I mean, you just send emails to her publicist or producers or whoever, whatever information is out there that's available. And from what I've heard, she's a very God-oriented, loving woman, and she does love to help debut people. And I really believe that your book will help a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been an honor to bring light to this with you.
Yeah, thank you.
And of course, I will help you via Skype or the phone or however you want, sweetheart, to understand what part of the spiritual path you're on at this time.
Oh, I have to talk to you.
Yes, definitely, definitely, definitely.
Yes.
And so, everybody, this has been Breath of Terra, special edition. I am going to take us out with a Jonathan Elias song, and I hope you enjoy. And Anique, thank you so much for calling and sharing with us
welcome.
On the Breath of Terra tonight. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Sooner than I'll be out of your mind. Thank you.